If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Michael Schneider is the founder and executive director of Pilots to the Rescue. Michael, what is this organization?
Good morning, Steve, and hello to all the WGN listeners. Pilots to Rescue is an organization that I started back in 2015, and we transport at-risk animals. These are largely from overcrowded shelters down south on here on the East Coast, and we bring them to a place where they have a better chance of being adopted.
Now, what's your story in the first place? I believe you were a skydiver at some point. I did that once in my life. It was fun, sort of. I don't know that I'd do it again. But what motivated you from going to be, I'm missing something, a skydiver to saving dogs and cats at shelters? And now you do that, as I understand it, pretty much full time.
Yes, that's correct. So I'm a former skydiver. I only have four jumps, so I can't really say former skydiver, but I just was enamored by the small plane that was in the single pilot, and I signed up for lessons immediately because I wanted to take passengers. And then when I came back to New York, I heard about people giving back using their skills as a pilot, and that was sort of my calling, because after flying to some cool lunch or going on a skyline tour, you know, we're always looking for reasons to fly. So I heard about people transporting animals, and that was just a cherry on top.
Why animals? You could have transported, I don't know, a life-saving, you know, for medical donors or to do something else, whatever else. But what attracted you to saving animals?
I've always had a connection with animals. Even as a young boy, I was a kid in the neighborhood that nursed the injured bird back to health. Our family, we went to the local SPCA and we adopted dogs and cats. And I even turned it into a business at a young age. I was around 11 years old. I used to do pet sitting, dog walking, that kind of thing. So I always had a connection with animals. I think they're smarter than we give them credit for, and they provide such love and compassion to their owners.
No, no question about that. So give me a scenario as to what happens. Do you have a bat phone that rings at 3 a.m? Hey, I've got 6 dogs here. You have to be here in 10 minutes. And then where is here? Do they get to come to the airport? Do you land on the roof of the shelter? I suggest I'm probably dramatizing it a bit too much.
Yeah. Well, we don't fly helicopters, but that would be interesting to pick up animals on a roof. It might come in handy during disaster. But we have over 100 shelter partners nationwide. Some of them are scheduled every month. Some are as needed. Rescue ebbs and flows. You know, we hear stories about people wanting to adopt animals and then they return them because they got evicted from their apartment or whatnot, hoarding situations, neglect. But it's all over the board. There's no shortage of animals that need to be rescued. We're still euthanizing nearly 1 million dogs and cats every year in this country. That's the disheartening statistic.
Yeah, indeed, that would be the case. In fact, we are euthanizing more animals. So it's complicated. Here's the good news. Given the number of animals relinquished, we are euthanizing, as a nation, fewer animals. However, more animals are being relinquished for a variety of reasons, or at least that seems to be the case. Are you finding that as well?
Yeah, I mean, COVID is a great example to reference because when we had the lockdown orders and we were, you know, staying at home in place, everybody wanted a furry friend. So we saw a clearing of shelters. And then when people weren't making money and they had to move, they could no longer take their pet with them. It was like a roller coaster. But yeah, there's a variety of reasons. Cost is a major consideration as the cost of anything pet related has gone up, especially because a lot of private equity has gotten involved in veterinarian services and medicines. So it's one thing to pay an adoption fee. It's another if you need a life-saving surgery for your pet that costs $5,000, $10,000. You know, so these costs, you know, food has gone up. A lot of property developers, they don't allow for pets. that makes it harder to adopt one. You know, there's a lot of reasons, lack of spay and neuter, et cetera.
You know, I agree with all those reasons you point out. About private equity, yes. Veterinary medicine. So we know inflation, that's a word we're all familiar with. All you have to do is go grocery shopping, right? Or fill up your airplane tank, in your case, or my car tank. And all of that has gone up. But the cost of veterinary care has gone up more than double that. And there are various reasons for it. But the most significant reason is the one you touched on, and that is kind of corporate takeover in veterinary medicine. That's a real thing. And it's been going on for some time. And at this point in time, we are paying double to triple inflation for that cost in veterinary medicine. And that is certainly, I would agree with you, a reason why, among others, people are relinquishing animals in numbers that they are relinquishing animals. And you touched on another one, that's housing. If people can't find a place to live that is accepting pets. But, you know, these issues are nuanced. For example, during the pandemic, you mentioned people wanted to do the right thing and help clear the shelters. And greatly in America and much of the world, that happened. But now we have families more than ever before with two or three or four pets. And it costs more to have two or three or four pets than it does to have one or two pets. And that, I think, plays into it as well. But you mentioned spay-neuter. I would think that at this point in time, Michael, that people, we've been talking about spay-neuter for decades and decades, that people would have caught on, or at least if they don't spay-neuter, be responsible. And in some parts of the country, more than others is the thing. Have you found this disparity between some parts of the country more than others?
Well, almost all the work brings us down south, and because of the temperate climate, there's just more strays and colonies of cats. And there are some successful trap, neuter, and release programs, but it's just they can't keep up. It's like a vicious cycle. But to answer your question, yeah, we find it more down south. We're typically going to the Carolinas, Georgia, Tennessee, Kentucky, even Florida, Texas, and all those temperate climates. The animals just are outside, and we can't keep up as a society. It's difficult, very difficult problem. We can't transfer ourselves out of this problem either. You know, I think what we do is we're creating more awareness and in a unique way that gets people's attention. So, you know, we keep beating that drum. It is helpful when these shelters know they have an ability to send animals to a better place to be adopted, and that's sort of where we come in with the aircraft and the 8 vans that we have. But we're fully aware of the issues that we still have, you know, some critical issues to move the needle on this problem.
And I want to talk about more of those problems. I want to talk about, you said something magical there. We cannot transport our way out of the problem. And I want to know your most harrowing, exciting rescue story. We'll hear all of that when we come back with Michael Schneider, founder, executive director of Pilots to the Rescue on WGN. Dave Dale's Pet World on WGN. Michael Schneider is the founder and executive director of Pilots to the Rescue. PilotsToTheRescue.org is the website. You said something that I want to jump on here. We cannot transport our way out of the problem. You have vans, you have airplanes, you bring the animals from the South, and something that drives me crazy, and you haven't said it, and I thank you for that, when people say kill shelters to other shelters up generally in the northern or in more urban areas in our country, because I think that terminology is not helpful to help solve the problem. If we cannot transport our way out of the problem, since now, even in places where 5 years ago, there weren't as many pets being relinquished, places like where I live in Chicago and Boston and Los Angeles, San Francisco, where more pets are being relinquished. New York City is another, where it wasn't as much. It was still an issue, but as much of an issue. Now it is again in everywhere in the country for all of the reasons we previously talked about. Cannot transport our way out. How do we get out, in your opinion, of the problem, Michael?
Yeah, well, that's a $1 million question. I think it's a multi-pronged approach. A lot of it has to do with awareness and education. And on the political side of things, there, you know, we have to keep writing our politicians, and there is some movement, and there's some great organizations doing that work. We were involved in a landmark case with the Ridgeland Beagles out of Wisconsin. I consider that a success because they closed down a medical breeding facility. And, you know, when you have cases like that, it gets people's attention. And then they might think twice about, you know, buying beauty products that are tested on animals. That's a different issue altogether than what we're kind of talking about. But I think, you know, we have to give a voice to the voiceless. And these animals, they deserve our attention and they deserve our care, because look how loyal and, you know, undeniable love that they give their owners, unconditional love. That's the word I was looking for. I mean, it's not an easy problem to deal with. A lot of it comes down to politics and money, but the more voice we give these animals, the more people standing up for them and humane treatment. I mean, listen, nobody's asking someone to be vegan, but there's no excuse for cruelty. And we've all become, you know, recently shed more light on factory farming conditions and stuff like that. There's a lot of great organizations and people that have a love for animals. Maybe some people would even go as far as saying they like animals better than people. So
I get it. How many animals do you think you have rescued approximately?
We've rescued over 7,000 animals to date, but I really feel like we're just getting started because I've only been doing this full time since 2021. It was COVID to thank for that. I was working a unfulfilling corporate events position, and COVID decimated it and forced my hand to make a go at this, and it was one of the best choices I ever made.
And you have 7,000 plus animals saying thank you very much. And I'm told that aside from transporting primarily dogs and cats, that you have transported wolves and sea turtles even, and other animals as well?
That's right. Yeah, we have three pillars. So we have the dogs and cats. We have the endangered species like wolves, sea turtles. We did a spider monkey. We've done some farm animals like pigs. And then we're also going to get more involved in disaster response. Disasters, as I don't need to tell your listeners, are happening with more frequent and more intense. Whether you believe in climate change or not, that's the reality. And that's a great use case for aviation because a lot of the roads are not passable after disasters, and we can bring in some much needed supplies and then take animals out, even if temporary, to give those shelters that get flooded or overrun a chance. Not to mention the intake of animals that get spooked. You know, when you get evacuation orders, you may not be able to even find your pets. They're hiding in the basement. They run away. And that's why it's so important to microchip.
I agree with everything you said, but where do you take, all right, so you're rescuing a wolf or a fox, or a sea turtle, where do you take them to, and why does a sea turtle need rescuing?
Sure. Well, the sea turtles, they often stay their welcome. So up in New England, towards the fall, in the winter, they just don't get the cue to swim to warmer waters, and they become hypothermic. It's called cold stunned. So then the local aquariums, they nurse them back to health, and then you got to get them down south, which works really well for our mission because we're going down south all the time. So typically we're flying from the New England area, could be like the New England Sea Aquarium. We've worked with them before. And we fly them down to like Jekyll Island, Georgia, or Orlando, Florida. And that's where they go for their forever home. So we just release them into the ocean. And those are really special missions to be able to see that. And then the wolves, I like to say there's no Tinder for wolves. You know, it's like it's all DNA matching. And because they're critically endangered, especially when you're talking about Mexican gray wolves or red wolves, you have to give them the best chance to procreate. So we transport them so they have a chance of having wolf pups.
With pheromones intact so they can attract whoever?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So this is incredible work. So I said the most harrowing, if there was one, or the most dramatic rescue. Is there one that stands out?
The one that stands out the most is when I was first starting doing this work, we were experimenting with different crates, and we used these soft crates with the zippers, if you're familiar with those. Those are not really good for transport. So I'm flying along, and all of a sudden, there was a cat that just crawled up into my lap. So cats can be escape artists. And I was a little jolted at first, but a little concerned about how the cat might react. But it just crawled up onto my top of my shoulder and wanted a better view.
All right. I was expecting a more dramatic story, but I'll settle for that. For more information, it's pilotstotherescue.org. Michael Snyder, who has saved about 7,000 plus animals at this point, thank you for everything you've done, everything you continue to do, founder and executive director of Pilots to the Rescue. Again, pilotstotherescue.org. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Steve.
Celine Milcarrick is the chief program officer at Paws Chicago. Paws Chicago has been doing what they do, and you know about Paws Chicago for a very long time. But here is what you might not know about. We'll talk about a couple of things. One is the Rescue Ranch, which just broke down. Celine, tell me about the Rescue Ranch. It sounds like something, Little House on the Prairie, Bonanza? I don't know.
Well, we're so excited. Paws Chicago has broken ground on the Paws Chicago Rescue Ranch, which is a transformative 20-acre campus in Hawthorne Woods that will expand our life-saving efforts for homeless and at-risk pets across Chicagoland.
Why is this important to have a facility way out there when it's Paws Chicago?
Yeah, so this milestone really just marks the beginning of a first-of-its-kind campus that is dedicated to providing specialized care, particularly for large dogs and cats, the animals most at risk of euthanasia in municipal shelters or at Chicago Animal Care and Control. And so this is located in the northwest suburbs, where we will be able to connect more large dogs with adopters who may have larger yards or more space or fewer housing restrictions, making it easier for these pets to find homes.
And you said two words there that are kind of magical. That's large dogs. I believe in urban areas like Chicago, most dogs that land in a shelter for various reasons, and you briefly touched on a couple, are in fact larger dogs. And it's harder to get them out of the shelter, you know, to find homes in the urban areas for various reasons. Am I right about that? Is that really at least a good part of why you decided, okay, we're going to find a space up here in the burbs where there may be more opportunity for these dogs to find homes, and in the meantime, have a little more elbow room before they're adopted?
Yeah, that's spot on. You know, in the urban environment, sometimes potential adopters who might be interested in a larger dog, they might have building restrictions on size and weight. They might live in a very high traffic area. So, or they might want a little bit more elbow room for their dog, you know, a house with a yard. So we're really excited to be opening this new venture. And we're also just so excited about the experience that these shelter animals are going to have, you know, rolling hills and scenic walking trails, just instant decompress when you arrive on the property.
You know, you've been doing this for a long time, and I don't understand it. I know what the science says about people not doing this, but again, it seems to be now going the other way. And here's what I'm talking about, spay-neuter. People are not spay-neutering their pets. They are in many ways looking for low-cost options. I understand that. And you will be providing that through the Forsyth Veterinary Medical Center at this facility once the facility opens up.
Absolutely. So the Forsyth Veterinary Medical Center is a high-volume spay-neuter clinic that will expand access to affordable and free spay-neuter services based on financial need while helping to prevent pet overpopulation.
And how important is that, even though people like you and me have been talking about spay-neuter now for decades?
Oh, it's critical. You know, when PAWS Chicago began in 1997, more than 42,000 animals in Chicago were being euthanized. Today, that number has been reduced by nearly 90%. And while adoption is critical for life saving, it is spay-neuter that prevents pet overpopulation at the source. So the Rescue Ranch will have a robust surgery center equipped to perform hundreds of spay-neuter surgeries during large spay days and really help to address the root of the overpopulation problem.
And also, you know, here's the thing. PAWS Chicago is a beautiful shelter, as shelters go. It is not home. So home can be a foster family or this new facility, no, not home, but we talked about it, will give these animals more space, if nothing else, than what can be done in the midst of any urban area.
Absolutely. This property is being transformed into a best-in-class animal welfare facility that really is going to take into consideration the latest advances in animal behavior science and shelter medicine. We will have, you know, accommodations for the dogs that will feature private outdoor patios for some fresh air. Cats, we're going to have just incredible daily enrichment, socialization, a feline sunroom, everything designed to help make the environment that these animals are in the shelters situation as comfortable and decompressing as we possibly can while they wait to find their future homes.
You know, I feel guilty now that I've left out cats, but I'm glad you brought them up. Cats generally don't need training classes, but dogs do. I think that is incredibly important, if not necessary. And PAWS Chicago has been and continues to do that, correct?
Absolutely. One of the most important things you can do after adopting a dog is to start training classes. Training, it helps to develop your human-animal bond with your new pet. It helps improve your communication skills with your new pet. It helps the pet build confidence, and it rewards appropriate behavior. And when you adopt from PAWS Chicago, actually including in your adoption fee is a voucher for your first training class at the PAWS Chicago Training Center. So you can use this voucher for any of our multi-week classes using that promo code. We offer in-person classes as well as virtual classes.
And the thing that I like about it as well is that you know it's going to be positive reinforcement. And another thing that you said is almost something like I've been saying and have been quoted in textbooks. It opens a window of communication from one end of the leash to the other.
Absolutely. Starting to develop that bond and to develop those communication skills with your new pet is just critical for the immediate time after the adoption, as well as developing just a lasting bond with your animal.
You know, sometimes there are misconceptions, I think, regarding animal sheltering facilities and also what's happening in Chicago that makes its way to the media, but it doesn't mean it's always correct. I want to talk about your diversion program, 360 at Chicago Animal Care and Control. We'll do that when we come back with Celine Milkerick, the program chief officer or chief program officer, either way, at PAWS Chicago on WGN. Celine Milkerick is the chief program officer at PAWS Chicago, but also there is a group of nearly every animal shelter in Chicago and metro Chicago area that kind of work together. They talk to one another, and I love that. I was a part of that beginning many years ago, Celine, and I'm so happy to see that is the case. And also how PAWS Chicago works in conjunction with Chicago Animal Care and Control. And that I am so happy to see as well. You know, Chicago Animal Care and Control, like any municipal facility, is underfunded. But actually, I think our facility does pretty well. And according to law, Animal Care and Control, like most municipal facilities all over the country, must, by law, take in whatever appears at their door, however many appear at their door. However, there's a diversion program. tell me about that, because you the goal is to help people in any number of ways so they don't need to give up their pet. And I think, Celine, according to data and according to just my personal experience, most people who are there to give up their pet actually don't want to do that and welcome whatever options that they can use to solve their problems, so they don't need to give up their pet. So talk about the diversion program.
Yeah, so 360 at CACC is a partnership between Paw Chicago and Chicago Animal Care and Control. And it was designed in response to a post-pandemic surge in pet homelessness and the strain on the city's shelter resources. So through 360, we provide support across the full life cycle of shelter animals, from preventing intake to improving life-saving outcomes through transfer and adoption. We have a full-time PAWS staff member at CACC facilitating adoptions, supporting the volunteers there to help introduce potential adopters to animals and find the right fit. And then this year, we also launched a new veterinary social work program at CACC. So our veterinary social work program exists to meet people at the doors of CACC and understand why they are there to bring in a pet. And so we're able to provide resources to help keep pets in homes. Our social work team understands that deep connection between people and their pets, and we can help them access resources such as pet food, veterinary care, and spay-neuter vouchers to help keep pets in homes.
You know, a couple of years ago, I first heard about the term veterinary social worker. What is that? And you're describing in part what these people can do, that they do other things as well. But my gosh, these are professionals that are actually trained to do this. This is what their job is. And they are very, very good at helping to provide resources for people who don't know where to look for those resources or otherwise don't have those resources that now can have access to them. You mentioned it a little bit, but can you talk a bit more about it or offer some examples?
Oh, so I think really our veterinary social work team is there to meet people where they are, understand what brought them there that day, and then support them with resources and referrals that might help them keep their pets instead of surrendering them to their shelter. So really trying to address these challenges before that surrender and to try to help keep these pets in loving homes.
One example can be, and unfortunately, it's an example that's seen all too often these days, I can't afford veterinary care for my animal. And the other thing is, since the pandemic, so pre-pandemic, we had, I'm going to guess at the number, but it's something like one. Here's another way to put it. We have more multi-pet homes than ever before, including more dogs. So on average, it's almost two dogs per household. For people that have a dog, they oftentimes have more than one. And for cats, it's even more the case. Also, many aging pets. So that need for veterinary care, maybe you can afford to take care of two cats and a dog, but can't afford to take care of two cats and three dogs. Maybe you were able to, but with inflation and the cost of veterinary care going up beyond inflation, by the way, that may not be true anymore. And you find ways to help these folks.
Yes, absolutely. We try to find ways to help these folks through referrals or through Paw Chicago's community medicine program. We also find that a lot of folks need access to spay-neuter services. And so to your point, Steve, about people having multiple pets in their homes, sometimes that can result in unwanted litters and another visit to Chicago Animal Care and Control. So we're there offering spay-neuter vouchers as well to try to break that cycle of intake that happens at the doors of CACC.
And sometimes it's just a matter of able to afford everything at the grocery store for your family. And that includes pet food, too, and you provide resources for that as well.
Correct. We can provide resources for pet food. We can also provide resources for behavior support for folks at the doors of CACC that might be struggling with training issues for their animals, and providing access either to our training center or consultation with our training specialists.
And I love that you said that, because one of the reasons, not only today, but forever, for people giving up their animal is a fracturing of the human-animal bond that has to do with behavior that isn't appropriate, at least for that individual household. So I love that you offer that too, because addressing that is also a way to oftentimes address public safety. So that is incredibly important. Tell me what's going on August 29th.
Oh, August 29th is going to be a really fun day at Montrose Harbor. It is the annual Pause Chicago 5K Run Walk, and it's the 26th annual of the largest Chicago pet-friendly event. It's a full day of fun. There's dog agility courses, there's raffles, there's live entertainment, and it's all to help save the lives of homeless pets.
And I think you even have booths that have free food samples. And, you know, I'm all about free. That's my favorite word.
It's a really, really fun event. I encourage anyone to go to our website at pausechicago.org/5K to learn more about registration.
Pausechicago/5K? No, do that again.
Pausechicago.org/5K.
That's what I said. All right. Celine Mulcarrick, thank you so much for bringing us up to date. Chief Program Officer at Pause Chicago. Thank you, Celine. I've been talking about chronic kidney disease in cats quite often, and it impacts most often older cats very often. So what do we do about it? Well, lots of studies, and at a recent American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine forum, scientists from Nestle Purina, collaborating with investigators from Texas A&M University, The Ohio State University, University of Pennsylvania, and Kansas State University, presented research showing that cats with kidney disease have distinct changes in the chemical compounds found in their stool. Yeah, comes out that end? Really? Scientists increasingly recognize what's called the gut-kidney axis. The idea is that the intestines and kidneys constantly influence one another. When the kidneys begin losing function, waste products that would normally be filtered from blood can build up. At the same time, changes in the gut's bacteria and the lining of the intestines may contribute to inflammation, creating a vicious cycle that may accelerate kidney damage. Researchers studied stool samples from 108 cats, comparing healthy cats with cats at several stages of chronic kidney disease. They discovered dozens of differences, particularly involving fats and fat-like molecules. Those findings suggest that the intestinal lining and the community of bacteria, yeah, bacteria living in a community in the gut, may change as kidney disease develops. One discovery especially caught researchers' attention. They identified a waste product called 2PY that was consistently elevated in cats with kidney disease. They didn't know that before. Now they do, even in the earliest stages of the disease. Think of it as a biochemical fingerprint that may one day help veterinarians to recognize kidney disease before cats become seriously ill, which would be the key. The amount of 2PY also closely tracked creatine. That's one of the blood tests veterinarians already use to measure kidney function. Too often, by the time cats begin showing obvious signs, such as increased thirst, weight loss, or decreased appetite, significant and irreversible kidney damage has already occurred. And by that time, yes, veterinarians can respond. They say, okay, there's a special diet your cat can go on. We want your cat to drink more water, sometimes easier said than done. There are steps that can be taken. But the secret would be to get in there earlier, before those signs or symptoms occur. And ultimately, this information might one day help. It was a little black dog that got loose, and somehow this little black dog living near San Francisco jumped into the water in the San Francisco Bay and began swimming away from shore. Why would this dog do that? And the dog is swimming and swimming and swimming, getting really tired. The water's really cold. In fact, seagulls began to circle like vultures. That turned out to be a good thing because that helped identify where the dog might be when someone nearby called 911. A witness who had spotted the lone dog paddling the opposite way from shore. Yes, firefighters and other first responders got to the dog, put towels around the dog, and it turned out the exhausted dog was actually okay and reunited with her family. We'll never know why the dog jumped into the water and was swimming the wrong way. We'll talk to you the right way next week, bright and early on WGN.